As of Friday, all eyes were on an Irish aid ship heading toward the Gaza Strip. This comes after a confrontation on Monday in which the Israeli Defense Forces boarded a ship sponsored by a Turkish Islamic Aid organization carrying hundreds of activists, an incident that left 9 activists dead and proved to be a PR disaster for Israel, despite its efforts at damage control. The activists ensured the clash would get press attention by webcasting live video from the boat soon after the Israeli soldiers boarded. Afterwards, the IDF released its own clips. Their tape included images of activists wielding chairs against the soldiers. The cameras panned over clubs, knives, and slingshots the IDF claimed to have found on board. Without unedited tape from an impartial source, it's hard to tell what happened, but the ready availability of the video kept the story in the news cycle, as both cable and broadcast news ran the images again and again. Brian Stelter covers television and digital media for the New York Times. He says that while the video is confusing, one thing we can say for sure is that both sides display a keen awareness of their audience.
The flotilla of activists had constructed this media campaign in advance where they had basically created a webcast network of live pictures from multiple cameras on the boats, beamed up to the satellite, live on the internet to any TV network that wants it. So they were heading out onto the open sea with a media strategy, you know, from the beginning.
And presumably they didn't have these cameras set up just to film their voyage, because who cares about the voyage,
right?
So it's in anticipation of some sort of confrontation, we can assume, can we not?
The degree to which they produced this event is notable. Also having spokespeople in other countries, not on the boats, able to be reached by the media at all times, certainly had an impact. On the other side of this, the Israeli Defense Forces had many cameras of their own, cameras on their helicopters, cameras with the soldiers, so they could present their side of the confrontation. Both sides pointed to video clips to try to prove that the other side was the aggressor. I think in this case, it ended up just making everything more murky.
The video is kind of inconclusive because it doesn't really give you context.
Yeah, if we were able to see unedited videos from each of these angles, maybe, and just maybe, we'd have a better sense of what happened and who was the aggressor. And by the way, it only gets worse when they add captions. At one point in the Israeli military videos, they add yellow circles around the weapons that they want you to see.
Some corroborating evidence or illuminating evidence should come from the journalists who were aboard the ship. They were taken into custody.
Right. Al Jazeera had about 7 people in this flotilla covering this story, producers, reporters, and cameramen. One was able to be released almost immediately. The others were held for a longer period of time. There were also members of the press from Australia, from Bulgaria, from Turkey. Very little eyewitness reporting got out, though, before the Israeli military moved in and really put a blackout on information here. But one of the sole eyewitness accounts that actually came out, one that was able to be broadcast live, was from an Al Jazeera reporter who was saying that the white flag was being raised by the boat, and still there was live fire going on.
Tens of people, civilians, have been injured. There are still sounds of live fire despite the white flag being raised.
But even that clip was seized upon by people on the web, some bloggers who were trying to suggest that that clip, that one moment in time, that it means that the Israelis were the ones that attacked first. And there was no evidence of that in the actual video.
Isn't it just a Rorschach test for where you stand on Israel vis-a-vis the Palestinians?
I think even when we do have these eyewitness accounts, they get twisted into different forms by the people on all sides of this anyway.
So if this is really about litigating in the court of public opinion, do you think the response to all of the inconclusiveness of the existing images will be for there to be fewer guys with guns and more guys with cameras? I mean, is this going to turn into some sort of Paddy Chayefsky mode of war where there are more videographers than soldiers?
Well, I think we're going to see a gradual increase in the video cameras in these conflicts, no doubt. But I remember an image that really struck me last year during the protests in Iran when we had people with camera phones posting onto YouTube through intermediaries. There was an image of, it may have been Neda, it may have been one of the other activists that was killed. I can't remember, to be
Neda
honest.
Neda Agasultan, the young woman who was shot in the head.
I remember seeing someone laying on the ground, either wounded or killed, and no less than 5 or 6 camera phones out circling this person. It certainly humanizes what's happening in a way that still photographs or eyewitness accounts can never do. And I have to think that that has an impact on the public's perception of these conflicts. The danger, obviously, is that if we see these dramatic, almost painful images over and over and again, we get numb to them.
I'm curious, based on what you've seen so far of the video from both sides, do you have any confidence that you know what happened?
I have much less confidence than I did when I first read about it.
All right, Brian. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Stelter covers television and digital media for the New York Times.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.